All right, Chair Lori, the floor is yours.
Okay, and can you remind me of your name again tonight?
You got Zeke here today.
Zeke, okay. Thanks, Zeke, sorry. Okay, welcome to the regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting. This is today's Tuesday, December 15th, and it's being held via teleconference. We have a full complement tonight, so we have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. Do we have any planning commissioner announcements? Michael?
I just wanted to say before the meeting got started, I know this is Jerry's last meeting, and I was looking at my ancient records, and I think we both joined the Planning Commission in 2005. So except for a stint under one leadership group, we've been here, I think, 13 out of the last 15 years. So I will certainly miss your leadership, especially post-Dr. Teft. And it's been very interesting to have you and I on the same committee with different ends of the donkey, elephant, horse, whatever you want to call it. And I've just enjoyed it immensely. It's made it a civil process, and I appreciate you're not getting caught up in the emotion of a lot of the issues we've had to go through, and I just appreciated your leadership and your camaraderie. So thank you very much as a citizen and as a planning commissioner.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So that's probably more than enough. I appreciate that, Michael. It's been great, you know, serving with everybody that's been on the commission. We've had some really fine people and fine intellects to deal with on this. So, okay, moving on, we'll move on to public comment. Zeke, do we have anybody in the queue that is wishing to speak? And Scott, could you show the contact information?
Yeah, working on it.
Okay.
Yes, sir, Chair. There is Sean Green on the line.
Okay, Sean, if you wish to speak.
Yes, I just wanted to say thank you to the planning commissioners who are going, are headed out, but that you guys have done so much for the community, and we've really turned a corner in the right direction on so many of our developments. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak to items not on the on the agenda?
We have Betty Winholtz up next.
Okay, Betty.
Yes, thank you. I just want to point out that my comments about environmental justice were sent about a month or so ago. I don't know if you still have copies of those. I'm hoping that you do. And that maybe you can address some of those. I have to go to work and I can't stay.
Okay, well, thank you for your input on that.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Betty. Zeke, do we have anybody else in the queue?
At this time, there's nobody else. Oh, no, nobody else.
Okay, we'll close public comment at this point and move on to the consent calendar. Does anybody wish to pull any of the items on the consent calendar? Okay, Susan?
I just wanted to ask a quick question about what was going on with the Atascadero Road Hotel project. Is that, I didn't see it on the tracking sheet, but I may have just missed it.
They just applied for their building permit, and I believe that that building permit came in after we published the tracking log. So you'll see it on the next one.
Cool. I just wanted to make sure it was still kind of in motion.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. That's all.
Everybody's got a great big set of plans on their desk now. They're probably very excited about that.
Big muscles now.
I'm excited to see it, you know, get going. It's yeah. Neat. Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments or discussions? Okay, can we have a motion?
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Can Scott, could you call the vote, please?
Commissioner Stewart?
Aye.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Andrafia?
Aye.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
And Chair Lohr?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay, great. Moving on to public hearings, we have B1, which is Plan Morro Bay, a continuation. And this is continuing from the last couple of meetings. Scott is, and or Amy, is there anything that you'd wish to bring up?
Well, we left off on the environmental justice element, as Betty aptly pointed out. And so that's where you'd pick up and kind of continue forward like you've been for the last several meetings.
Okay. We at this point, I think we'll open it up for public comment if anybody wishes to speak to this item before we get rolling on this. Zeke, do we have anybody raising their hands?
The people in the queue, nobody has their hand raised at this time.
Okay. Inform me if somebody does come raise their hand and wish to speak to an item.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Zeke. Okay. So we left off at the environmental justice. So this was Section 4139. Does anybody have anything for the next few pages on that?
Yeah, I do, Jerry.
Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, just one on the opening paragraph. And I don't think I saw it anywhere. I didn't see what a definition of livability actually was. We had a rather lengthy note from one of our citizens about some of the definitions and things like that, and I was just wondering, do we ever really define what that is? I know we refer to the livability report. Is that the secondary source then that they define what that is in that report?
I believe that may be the case. We would need to check that. I don't think we define it in this section.
It may be something we want to think about, even if we pull it from the other piece, because I think Mr. Sadowski's interest in environmental justice, I share a lot of the similar instances that he was pointing out, but I think part of it comes around what's the nature of that definition. So that's one point. The other point is we don't make any discussion about social justice in this, really. It's just environmental justice. There's nothing in the general plan linking the two at all, right? I wouldn't see any, at least.
I think there are aspects of social justice and environmental justice, but that's
I don't think it would hurt to, since we're looking at the nature of what the of defining some of these things, it may not be a bad thing to have something in that scope and content overview that talked about a relationship between the two issues, because I think they have there are some intertwined things. I think the piece that's on much earlier on 4-3 talks about population vulnerabilities, and we don't really get into that here for quite some time, I don't think, till we get into some of the implementation things. And I had passed on some things before that I think are, I'm not sure what the nature of them were, that were on some state sites that talked about some specific, concerns about where our population was in different indices against other populations in the state. And some of them were kind of troubling, and that would be a better thing to look at a little bit later, I think, in the text. But that idea of social justice and population vulnerabilities, I don't think would be a bad thing to have some kind of discussion closer up front. And then if we go to 4140, when we have relationship to other elements, and we do get in eventually to the idea of relating it to the climate action plan, but we don't have anything in that opening paragraph of relationship to other elements where we specifically say that. Because I think some of the former Commissioner Sadowski's concerns about greenhouse gas emissions, if we have an overt linkage up front to the climate action plan, we can take some of that direction there to say that some of those issues are actually being dealt with in the climate action plan. We wouldn't necessarily have to address them in detail with this particular element. That's my guess, at least.
Okay. Is there any verbiage that you'd like to see added or changed to this, Michael, or what are you proposing?
Well, I would just like to suggest that, you know, since we do use the term on 4.3 population vulnerabilities, that there's a relationship between some aspects of environmental justice and social justice that relate to population vulnerabilities. And that could be primarily economic, the way the livability piece speaks, because that may end up hurting or changing the diversity of the town based on economic viability being here. And then we also have the environmental justice aspects of climate change, which if we have reference to the climate action plan in relationship to other elements, I think that would be satisfactory to me. That puts that issue to bed, just to reference it in that section.
Okay. Amy, is it possible to reference these items in the so that it's so people know where to look? I think we've addressed a lot of these issues in the rest of the plan.
Right.
You know,
like on 4147, we talk about the climate action plan. You know, so it's already referenced in this section. It's just not up front with relationship to other elements, where I think it should be a kind of.
Yeah, I think that was because it's not an element, but it definitely could be mentioned there. I don't have any issue with that.
Yeah. Okay, so Susan, Joe, Jesse, how do you guys feel about that?
Well, yeah, I think that's fine. I certainly have no objection. I think it's a good idea.
Okay.
I have no objection either.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So then moving forward up through like 4141.
I just want to say a lot of people should look at this livability report, because a lot of things are coming out of that. And that seems to be it's a 10-year cycle that's on. So we're working from like 2017, 2016 kind of cycle on that. We won't have another one until 2027, something like that.
I think it suggests we update it every 5 years, doesn't it?
5 years?
Yes.
And what are the policies?
Okay. OCDJ 1.5.
Yeah, because that's a pretty key indicator for this section. And I remember looking at it a couple weeks ago, thinking we were going to talk about this last meeting. And some of that's gone from my head right now, but
I think Betty Winholtz mentioned that too, that an update on a 5-year cycle would probably be better than a 10-year cycle in her letter.
Okay, so further on, 4142, 143, and then 144 and 145, into the goals and policies.
I had one on 144.
Okay, Jesse.
Policy EJ 1.3, services for all. Get back on my soapbox talking about accessibility, talking about ADA mostly. And I know this talks about more social justice types of inclusion services and things, but I'm wondering if we left out those of limited ability in kind of talking about the way the city And then, you know, I know Scott's going to cringe when I say this, but I mean, you know, we've talked about accessibility down on the Embarcadero a lot. I've talked about accessibility down on the Embarcadero a lot. Accessible parking and, you know, general accessibility down there. So I'm wondering if we can include that here.
So, you know,
my perspective.
I'm sorry, Amy, could you repeat that?
No objection from my perspective.
I agree. I think that's helpful. I think it's a group that especially it's affects people with older age as I'm moving into, and you know, so it's not just people with disabilities, can be at any age group. And so I think as we look at an older population here, that's something to keep in mind.
And we do have a citywide access plan that the cities put together a few years ago that evaluates all city facilities.
Sure, I think we're moving in the right direction. I just was hoping maybe we could strengthen the language in this policy for that purpose. So I mean, if we pointed back to it, say we decided to revamp the Embarcadero and make it more pedestrian, like we've talked about, that we could point to this and say, okay, well, we need to put accessibility at the beginning of the thought process. So that's just my thought.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. We could reference the report that we did because it's, I mean, the thing's like this thick.
sure. Yeah. That would be helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I think that's agreed upon.
Okay.
You know, I'm kind of lost my notes on this. I apologize. But there was also, you know, I had a thought about accessibility, you know, can also mean maybe implementation more of a, you know, of more of in the sense of rideshare micro mobility, such as, you know, rideshare scooters or even rideshare bikes or something like that. I don't know. You know, I know it's in the, in the circulation plan, we talked about that, but should we reference something like that in the accessibility section also? Because it doesn't always mean ADA, you know, if you can get from one side of the town to the other on a rideshare bike, that's also, I think, is makes the town much more accessible. So I'm not sure how we would do that. I would just wanted to bring it up to see if anybody else had any ideas on that.
I agree with the thought. I just don't know. I'm with you on, I don't know how we could word that or squeeze that in.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep it as a thought then.
If we go back to 4.142, you know, one of those issues that came up in that Cal Environmental Screen 3-0 things that I sent Scott a few weeks ago, it's one of the things that they look at are census district concerns. And we actually had a high pesticide risk in the census district that goes up the 41 corridor. And I was wondering, with the water recycling going into that aquifer and the idea of that's already apparently an exposed pesticide area, they didn't get into any depth. I don't know if that's from airborne pesticides because of the fields there, or if it's something that's getting into the surface water, or if it's into the groundwater. But I was very concerned that something like that would show up, because we didn't show up bad in very many things at all in that environmental screen thing. It had pesticides, linguistic isolation, and housing costs. And we seem to acknowledge the housing costs quite a bit here. I'm not quite sure what linguistic isolation means in their area there, but the pesticide thing was the biggest issue. So if we have one that we need to coordinate with the county about, that's something that I would say long term we should really monitor or have something in here about the quality of the aquifer based on the agricultural techniques that are being used up there.
Yeah, there was a pretty good lack of specificity in that. I looked at that You know, because it stuck out to me as well, obviously, because it was, the numbers were high. And it didn't give, there was no granular, you know, information related to it. It just was a, you know, blanket statement. And there was nowhere to, you know, to drill down into to see what they were talking about.
Right.
So it's unclear at best. There's a section that I looked at that talked about it generally, you know, just like had a general comment on it just globally in the state. As it was, that was tough. I didn't really know what to do with it.
I don't know either. I just know that if we weren't possibly looking at drawing the well there for some use, whether it's to sell for irrigation or whether it's to actually potentially supplement our state water, that's a long-term issue that doesn't seem like that valley is going to change away from agriculture. If anything, it's going to be more intensive agriculture. So if there's a recognized in the state documents condition there that would potentially damage the quality of the aquifer, it ought to be something I think we try to take a look at a little bit more. Even if it's something to say, coordinate with the county on agricultural practices relative to the groundwater basin.
I know Damaris has had some conversations with the county stormwater manager and I know that they do talk about these things. And I've, you know, been at these meetings where, you know, things are going over my head, but I mean, they're talking about, you know, watersheds and things coming from, you know, the Creston area all the way down, and, you know, and maybe it's not just, you know, the agriculture along, you know, Little Morrow Creek, it might be all the way up, you know, further than we're thinking. That's kind of my thought, is that this is a kind of a regional problem more than just, and we just happen to be at the funnel end.
Oh, no, I agree. It is a regional problem. I don't know which way, you know, if it's airborne crop dusting. I remember when we signed off on our house, there was a contingency there, or a notification about crop spraying, which I thought was very bizarre. And then I thought about it a little bit more. You know, you don't know which way the wind's blowing around here. It's just an issue. I think, again, you know, when we have something there, it says, and other undesirable or even dangerous environmental issues, in a way it's covered in a broad sense there on floor 142 at the top. But if we had something that had that specificity in it, you know, it would be something else. We don't rise to the point that the state suggested we had an environmental justice concern to direct money toward us. That's saved for another level of difficulty that none of those things in the Cal Enviro screen showed. Those are more in the valley and especially around Los Angeles area. So we don't have anything rising to that level that had another Senate bill trigger associated with social or environmental justice concerns.
So Michael, did you say that they called out linguistic isolation?
Yeah, that's one of the things that they talked about. And I imagine that has to do with the farm workers and people like that, but I'm not sure.
Well, I could just see in general, you know, we have a population here that is perhaps relatively hidden. They keep to themselves at times, but our Hispanic population, I would say even our some of the East Asian population, the Thai restaurant next to me, I always wonder, like with the chamber, how much outreach is actually going to those populations? How much is translated into Spanish? It's been an issue with the pandemic. Information getting out to the Spanish-speaking population has lagged dramatically. So that can be a health issue as well, certainly a community well-being issue. I think the city does an okay job of getting things translated, like in the water bill as messages go out. I believe they go out in Spanish as well as English, but that's kind of a significant thing that I think we don't often think about. Is anybody approaching their businesses? You know, it's not just farm workers. There's a lot of you know, the service workers in the community, restaurant owners in the community, people, who may not be paying attention to what's coming out at them in English. So I could like see adding something in here.
It was just on that CalEnviro screen piece, which like I said, Scott's taken a look at it. I don't have any trouble at a very global level bringing those things into the key issues in an introductory statement. I don't think we have to have a action item on each one, but
right.
I do think it's if you're looking at something that's a forward-looking piece and it's about justice, well, linguistic isolation is a justice issue.
It is.
As are housing costs, as are the potential of, you know, regional practices with agriculture getting into our groundwater, which we're just spending a ridiculous amount of money to try to protect and enhance.
Interesting.
Well, they do. So did you want to beef up the language on EJ-1.3 or because they do mention the, you know, the accessibility of cultural and linguistic populations and stuff. So there's already some language there, Michael. It says ensure the accessibility of facilities and services that meet the cultural, linguistic, gender, and sexual orientation needs of client populations.
I do know our cutoffs, our census cutoffs, don't make the typical California standards where they would need to, or certain governmental agencies would have to send out flyers in Spanish or, you know, some other language. So I mean, it might not be a bad idea to, you know, if we feel there's a specific need to send that out. And I mean, Spanish makes the most sense, but I mean, you know, it could be another language that, you know, we feel the need to specifically include, because I know we don't always send it out in both languages because our census numbers say we don't have to sometimes. So
but I think that kind of, that catches it. I'm not sure if that's strong enough for you, Jesse and Michael.
Doesn't really matter to me. I mean, you know, as a growing up, I've been Hispanic my whole life. So, you know, if you have a 14-year-old in the house that can speak English, you know, they usually are translating for the parents and doing the taxes, you know, so that's just kind of how things worked. But just speaking from experience.
So do you think we need to beef up that language, or do you think that's adequate?
I mean, a lot of my Hispanic friends in the city, you know, they speak English, or they have, you know, family members that speak English well enough that they could, you know, lean on those on their familial resources to get it done. I think this is strong enough for me. So,
okay. Any other objections, or does this? Okay. Okay, I think it's in there, and I think it's kind of, you know, it's going to be almost on a case-by-case basis more than anything else, I think, although that is the goal that's there. So I certainly believe in the goal of that. I think everybody should be able to understand what's coming from the government.
Where did you see that, Jerry? Where was that text, actually?
It's page 4, 144. In under goals and policies, it's policy EJ-1.3 towards the middle of the page. It's under services for
all.
All
right.
I think.
I just noticed on that same page, implementation action EJ-2, I believe it was Commissioner Lucas was asking about social justice and environmental justice. There's one example there that training covers both, that's called for in that action.
Which policies specifically, Amy?
Implementation action EJ-2, the equity and diversity training.
Okay.
I've got to get my tea, I'll be right back.
Yeah, on page 145, yeah.
Policy EJ-1.4 also refers to equity training to advance equity and social justice across all areas of service.
Okay. Okay, so I think it's in there. We just have to find it. So, okay, moving on through 4146, 4147.
Can we talk about policy EJ 2.4 real quick?
Sure.
I like the language in the policy, and my only suggestion would be, should we be referencing the new state language for housing, ADUs, GADUs, tiny homes, things like that? Should we be referencing that specifically, or is it strong enough?
You know, I don't know if we should reference it specifically, because I think that's going to be changing. You know, there's already bills that are working on for, you know, for basically splitting up, you know, R1 zone, R1 lots into 4 to 6 residences and stuff. So I think if we get into listing everything, we're going to be out of date within the next couple of weeks almost.
Fair enough.
What I'm worried about.
There's also quite a bit on things like that in the housing element.
Yeah. Okay, anything else? Okay, through 147, through 148, and through 149. So it's basically the rest of the element.
I don't think we want to touch EJ 4.4 at all, do we? Vectors and infectious diseases?
The only thing on 4147 is, again, because of the pesticide issue, it says promote local food sourcing. And, you know, I'm pretty much solely organic. I don't know if we want to say look at promoting organic as a niche here because of our unique climate and our growing season and things like that. It seems like that's a market decision, but I don't know. That's just a personal thing.
You know, I firmly agree with you, but I also know that, you know, a lot of my choices, you know, I worry about pushing the organic over the availability. You know, there's some groups are not going to be able to afford organic where they could afford local, local fresh, better, and it may even be better for them to have the variety rather than to push something as that is organic, although that's what I agree with, though. So
I also think a lot of farmers actually are using a fairly minimal amount of pesticides, the local ones anyhow, if at all. Same with fertilizers, but getting an organic certification is such a process that they don't bother with it.
Yeah.
So I think it's become a little more mainstream, sort of goes without saying with a lot of them.
Again, I think the market has already promoted that around here.
Yeah.
Definitely. To a pretty high level. So.
Yeah. And I think we have some pretty good sources, you know, for both local, natural, but non-certified organic. And I gotta give a shout out that the new green grocer we have in town is it's a joy to go to. So that's a real resource that I'm glad we have. Okay, anything else through the end of the
chapter? One thing I was thinking about, we've done so much about improving the walkability on the Embarcadero. So we have our access issues and we have our harbor walk, which is fabulous. I don't think we've done a whole lot about the rest of the town's walkability. And one thing that was really wonderful in the initial shutdown was the road in State Park being shut down and the campground shut down. So all that new extra access to walking places, I saw so many more people just even walking the streets. But there are parts of our town where if you're not going to walk the streets and there aren't any sidewalks to walk them, you kind of have to drive to a place to walk somewhere. So you might drive to the state park so you can walk the trails on Black Hill or around in the campground. And or you might drive to the beach or somehow get across the highway to the beach, which is a little scary sometimes, especially with children or pets if you're walking across. So I don't know if we want to somehow... I mean, it does relate to chronic disease. It relates to overall health of the community. Look at ways to create more walkability in the rest of the town. Just a thought.
I mean, the circulation element tells you what the build out of every street in town is, meaning like sidewalks and that type of thing. We have the bike and pedestrian master plan. I think that this general plan, one of our implementation items is to update that. Because it's kind of out of date at this point and maybe it wasn't the best document to begin with. So those are two places where we say what we're going to do and what the build out of our streets are supposed to be. And then, we have the bike and ped plan, master plan that's supposed to be updated, as one of the implementation items here and would get a little deeper into that overall topic, especially as it relates to maybe like more trails and things like that. So I don't know if that's adequate or not, just those are things that are in the document now.
Yeah, so then maybe it's there. I could see it also being referenced in here in this section.
I'm kind of remembering some things before too about there's a policy about access to school, the different schools, so that there are paths to go to both Del Mar and the high school.
Identified. That was safe pathway.
Yeah, and the circulation element has several.
Yeah. But I don't think it's a bad thing to want to have that addressed if we do a new specific plan somewhere to consider the walkability of an area. Like if we ever would get North Main Street together, you know, that would be a fantastic place to walk, you know, mm-hmm. And it's just a very difficult place right now. It seems like there's too many gaps. It's a little sketchy. But it should be a beautiful paseo.
Yeah, there's a, we used to frequent Port Townsend in Washington State. And this is just on a side here. And they had set up their town from the start with walking trails throughout the town. There was probably, I don't know, 30 miles of walking trails that went by everybody's, you know, all the subdivisions had walking trails behind them in the development and stuff. And it made the community just a gorgeous place to live and just really friendly too, it seemed. Because you could walk from one end of the town and never get on a street except for crossing. So I think it may be too late, but in future layouts or future specific plans, I think that should be, you know, that would be a highly prized goal to include that. Okay, so then section 5, the implementation strategy.
You guys have already reviewed all of those.
Yeah, we've gone through all of these. Does anybody have anything that either on that or on the glossary and acronyms that they would like to bring up or include? Or I know we had a lot of discussion about low, moderate, and median affordabilities and stuff like that, so...
I seem to recall thinking we had some definitions to go over. Right.
I had sent something.
Section 6 in the glossary.
Something just got a while ago about access, and we don't have accessibility, which is kind of different than what we're talking about when we talk about access. So there's access, and then there's access public. And access by itself seems to mean vehicle access. And then public, does that just mean the public has access to it, or does it have to do with pedestrian or wheelchair access? Or it seemed like we might want to tighten that up a little bit.
Well, one thing too, Mr. Green sent us some correspondence that talked about trying to get a clear definition of vertical access to coastal. And that's something, since we have coastal access lateral in here, we might want to have coastal access vertical, or whatever the better way to talk about it is, because he was concerned that some of our pinch points come from, in other words, we should be looking at some of those to be more generous, like at the 10-foot level instead of restrictive down to the 5-foot level. And some of those are already built in to past judgments, but I think in the future we should be trying to make that very clear.
There actually is coastal access vertical. It just got put in bold right after.
Oh, I see. Okay, you're correct.
Yeah, all so right. There were some shifts that needed to be made.
It's right in front of me.
Well, but it was hard to see. No. There are a number of
formatting.
Yeah. And thank you, Commissioner Stewart, for the email about some of those changes. That was great.
Responding to your comment, Susan, on the first part of access, not the vertical, my notes from how that was revised from the previous draft is, I think, the definition of public access came from Coastal Commission staff, so that's what they want to have in there, but I think the other parts could be up for discussion.
Okay. Okay. So,
hey, Jerry, I just
got to go ahead, Joe.
Just returning for a moment to page 148, where they talk about emergency housing. I kept reading this provision, and when I read it, it strikes me as just a little confusing in that it seems to be emphasizing providing housing for the homeless during emergencies. Now, I realize when you read it, it's a little broader than that. But I just wonder if we shouldn't be talking about, you know, having an obligation to provide, you know, try to provide housing for the homeless, not just when there's a climate emergency facing the homeless.
Yeah, the way it reads, it reads more as an emergency measure. You know, even the qualifying clause at the end, where it says, and homeless populations during extreme weather events. You know, it's almost like we're saying we're not going to take care of them regularly.
Are you guys looking?
Well, I'm looking
back on 4148 policy EJ 4.6, and they aren't talking about just emergency housing.
Well, it mentions transitional and supportive housing services as well, but I'm not sure if that's what they're actually talking about, or only that in the context of an emergency. And I'd like it to mean that we're talking about that kind of housing beyond the context of a climate emergency.
You know, and you're right, Joe. This whole section, we kind of stepped over any of the, you know, housing for the...
Yeah.
You know, the home, I don't know what we want to call them, homeless, you know, because that's what they are.
I think
they definitely are probably the only really group that we have here that would be truly, you know, in need of the environmental justice, or most in need of the environmental justice.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very small percentage of the population, but it's so extremely visible, and And for that reason alone, you know.
I think it reads like this because it's nested under the policy that relates to increased health risks as a result of climate change.
So that's
why you're seeing it worded that way. It doesn't negate any other policies elsewhere in the document with regard to how we would address issues of homelessness. And I would imagine Amy can speak to the policy that we have in the housing element that addresses, if that's correct, Amy.
Yeah, we have a whole goal for that addresses homelessness in the housing element. Goal H4, and it's got four policies and two implementation actions underneath those.
If I remember that, most of it was based on quote unquote regional solutions. Is that still the primary focus?
Yeah, there's a regional homeless shelter policy. There's an outreach policy that would be led by within the city. Community involvement policy. So that's looking for ways to find temporary housing and working with, you know, those who are already working on the homeless issue. Only the regional one specifies that it's a regional approach. And then there's a hotel motel voucher policy. And then the implementation actions one is the regional coalition that exists, continuing to work within that framework. And then also considering an overnight parking program as the other implementation action.
Okay. Yeah, the overnight parking program, I think that's important, and we're not doing that. So it doesn't seem to be, you know, we've added RV parking on the Embarcadero by Coleman Park, but we haven't added any RV parking for the homeless in anywhere in the city. So we're going in the wrong direction on that one, in both phases, but.
Okay, so any more on the glossary or?
Do we want to add a definition of accessibility?
I think that's a good idea.
I had written down the degree to which people, well, this is out of, you know, Google it. Accessibility, the degree to which people with disabilities are able to access buildings, beaches, et cetera. But I don't, and that when we talk about accessibility, that is sort of a planning term. So I don't know if we want to.
We may want to look at ADA there and see what ADA, how the Americans with Disabilities Act actually defines accessibility. If we're gonna go there,
I think that would be a good idea, Jesse, to just have something consistent, whether it's with state or federal guidelines. But we use it in the document, so I feel like it should be in the glossary, and it's different than access.
Yeah, Title 24, the building code will define accessibility different than ADA will. But I think, you know, we're talking, I think we're talking more in planning terms than building terms. So I think it would be more appropriate to pull it out of ADA rather than Title 24, in my opinion.
Okay, I can go along with that. Okay, we got a little head nods. So Scott, was there anything else in here that you saw that was lacking as far as glossaries or acronyms?
I mean, it seemed pretty good to me. We have, you know, some other, you know, previous requests related to some definitions that you asked us to add, and we'll be adding those in. But other than that, I mean, I think it's pretty good. It seems like a pretty good list.
Okay.
This is going to be a bad time to bring this up, but, I was kind of bothered by that whole high bounty issue. And, you know, I've had a lot of time to think about it, and I've thought about it a lot. And I'm wondering if we could tighten up the definitions of what exactly the problem was down there. And, you know, in hindsight and, you know, dwelling on this for a long time has given me the ability to see that there was a problem. But I guess my bigger issue was it was difficult to define the problem. So I'm wondering if we had to look in these definitions and see if we can't tighten it up so that it will be easier to define in the future.
Well, there's one on noise.
Yeah, well, and, you know, and
noise and disturbance.
Right.
So I think noise was pretty well, we laid out noises in some pretty good graphs.
I would say this, that putting a definition here related to noise probably isn't going to help us, given that the enforceable sections related to noise are in the municipal code.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. I was just thinking
We do have the noise element. It tells us how we're supposed to measure noise and noise impacts, and our code does refer to that. So, I mean, if there's something there you don't like, then we could take a look at that. But I don't know that putting a definition here is going to help us, because we use this other piece of the code, of the municipal code, to conduct enforcement.
Sure. It's just, the way that all kind of shook itself out, the chief needed to lean on code enforcement and planning to enforce a noise problem. And there was a noise problem. So, I mean, I want to concede that. But, it seems like if it was a planning issue, maybe we ought to tighten up what the enforceable standards definitions are. Because when I'm trying to do this from memory, and I should have done a little more research if I was going to speak on this, is like I am. But when we talked about sound studies and we talked about ambient noise levels from point A to point B, it just seemed it seemed like it could have used some more definition. And I'm wondering if this is the place we ought to do it, or if we ought to be looking somewhere else.
I think the specific should be somewhere else.
Okay.
I think this is, there are a lot of different 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 different definitions in here about various noise things, and it does talk about levels greater than 60 LDN contour measured in dBA, whatever all of that means, require noise attenuation, noise any sound that is undesirable because it interferes with speech and hearing or is intense enough to damage hearing or is otherwise annoying. Noise simply is unwanted sound. I mean, there's a lot of definitions of noise in here, but I think, to get to specifics for particular experiences that people are having, it is in our various codes.
I just feel like one person's noise is another person's music, and I didn't feel like we addressed that in a way that was as fair as it could have been. So,
I will say I have heard from some of the neighbors in that area that they're having a peaceful life. So I think it's a volume issue. I think people appreciate music, but
do we need a music definition?
There you go.
I don't think we have that kind of time.
Then we'll move on to what is art.
There you go.
All right, well, I have been heard.
Okay, I have an issue, Scott, and I think we talked about it earlier, and I'm not sure where it fits in here, but we're kind of wrapping this whole thing up with a bow now. But when we talked about the zoning on industrial properties and commercial properties, which are now, they're, because we're dropping out the overlays on all of the zones, and they're just being tied into the certain zones. What happened is it was either on the commercial or the industrial, where they were in a transitional area, it disallowed the new zoning, the new requirements disallowed residential other than a 1200 square foot, caretaker's unit. Where presently, before this goes forward, it was allowed to have an R4 zone attachment, an R4 overlay on it. So where that happens in the city, we're essentially doing you know, what they claim they're doing on Panorama, where we're downzoning the ability to put housing in that zone. So it's part of the way that we changed the zoning and eliminated the overlay classifications on properties. So I know this is kind of extended in the weeds, but how have you thought of any other better way to handle that, Scott?
I did go back and look, you know, at some of the conversations and some of my notes on that, and it does look like the Planning Commission discussed it. And I also had notes from GPAC where it was discussed. It seems like we moved the residential, you know, discussion and expansion of residential uses in commercial zones to the C1 and C2 areas, meaning under current zoning. There are different classification names underneath the current land use plan. So I'm not exactly sure. Like, I don't know that. I guess it just kind of depends. It seems to me like the Planning Commission discussed it, and we ended up there based on those discussions. I don't think that it actually like came out of, you know, that was the starting point. I guess I didn't really realize that when I talked to you before about it, Jerry. It wasn't until I kind of went back and did some of the research that I saw it in my notes coming out of the GPAC and the Planning Commission.
Yeah, it seemed like it was an unintended consequence, you know, because, you know, we don't want, you know, I agree that we don't want to have our commercial zones, you know, dominated by residents. But then again, where they're allowed now in the transitional areas between the commercial and the residential, or the, you know, the industrial or residential where they abut, that was where the overlays were, and they allowed a transition. And it seemed like we got rid of those transition areas.
And this is the first time I'm hearing this. I recall when we worked on this to try to get rid of a lot of this split zoning or overlay much earlier in the process, but so do those commercial and industrial, I guess commercial would be the first question, is the residential not allowed now in them? Is that's what you're saying?
Yeah, that's the reading of it. Where we had an overlay, it's been changed so that all the, where it was an R4, where there was an R4 mixed use availability to that, it's now at, it's now only a 1,200 square foot caretaker's unit allowed. And I can see where we want that through the majority of it, the majority of the zone, but this overlay was specifically in the transitional areas where it would actually be appropriate.
So Jerry, so is the thought that by doing so, we've decreased the value of these properties, perhaps because it's no longer available to have three or four residents? Is that your thought, in sort of unfairness to the owners?
Yeah, it's no longer available. It's no longer able to have a mixed use on there. And so
down zone, so we have to increase the density somewhere else. I think is what
right. We've down zoned. So therefore, the available zoning there needs to be replaced somewhere else in the city or another. So it's a two-point track there.
Wasn't some of the concern about having or losing spaces that could be semi-industrial, light industry, commercial, that we didn't have, especially with the industrial spaces, we didn't have a whole lot of opportunity for that anywhere in town.
I'm sorry, Scott. From what my understanding, it doesn't change the ability to do that. It just changes the ability to add residential in upper floors.
So under the general plan land use map, it's the general light industrial classification, and the definition for that is light industry uses which are generally not compatible with residential, emphasis added, or most commercial uses. Existing residential buildings are permitted and are considered conforming. That's the general plan land use designation for it. And because it makes the differentiation between, hey, you probably don't want residential units here, the zoning is consistent with that. And so what I was saying before was, I went back and looked at my notes from when we talked about these things, and it was discussed at both the GPAC level and Planning Commission level.
Okay.
I'm not saying that it can't be changed. All I'm saying is there was discussion, you know, at those two different levels about this specifically, and there was concurrence. So I didn't really realize that in having my one-on-one conversation with you, Mr. Lohr, but that was what I found when I went back and looked through my notes.
And what I'm saying is that these are only on the transitional properties where it would be appropriate for that. It's not, you know, I'm not trying, I don't think it's a problem in most of the zoning, but just where they're adjacent to the residential, where it actually makes sense to be able to have a transitional period there. And then Scott, on the other side of that is just how are we going to handle, you know, increasing density somewhere else to allow for the density that we're removing?
Well, it's not a requirement that we don't have any issue related to state laws that relates to this, because the primary land use designation is not residential. It's, it's the heavier commercial here under the existing, you know, standards, and that doesn't change. So we don't have an issue. It's only when you're taking residentially zoned property and downzoning it do you run into an issue. And we've already done that, actually. We actually recaptured it by putting the residential mixed-use overlay in the zoning, not in here, in the zoning over portions of our commercial areas, C1 and C2, which is not what you're looking at tonight.
Right, Jerry?
Yes.
In its current version, and say somebody wanted to put two or three units in a second or third story of an industrial building in one of these transitional areas, would there be is there some sort of an appeal process whereby the owner could come to the Planning Commission and say, I know at this point I can't, but, you know, let me tell you my story about what I want to do and the specifics of the property. Is there an appeal process?
You can't get a variance to use.
Yeah, you would need a variance, which is fairly...
Well, you can't get one. It's actually illegal. You can't get a variance to use. It's prohibited by California government code.
So we're actually changing the use on a certain number of properties in town by doing this. And we're actually eliminating the ability to build residences there on those properties.
They could always do a general plan amendment, right, Scott?
Well, yeah, but I think what Commissioner Lohr is talking about is, do we want that change? And so, I mean, there's not a lot of these in town. Give me a second here, and I will share my screen so we can kind of see what we're all talking about, okay? Maybe I'll share my screen.
Okay. It's a nice snow scene.
Nice. Yeah. I was just feeling all cozy.
So can you see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay, so the land use map, so it's this sort of lavenderish color here and here. And, you know, over here next to where the hardware store is. That's the land use classification, the light industrial that's being impacted. Whereas under current land use, I don't have the map in front of me, I have to go look at it. And then the commensurate implementing zoning currently allows for residential uses because it's got that slash, whatever it is, R something, underneath the zoning that allows for residential uses there.
And this, we moved away from that to avoid the sort of conflicts that you run into with sort of industrial uses and residential uses. And that's what I was saying, was that the both GPAC, we had the land use discussion, and Planning Commission, we had the land use discussion, talked about that. Because at least that's what my notes say. I mean, I have to go back and look at the specific meetings, you know, to tell you exactly what you said. But I did have notes, you know, that was the direction we were going. So I don't know that we necessarily came up with that originally. I think it might have been something that was changed.
Yeah, I think the only place where the overlays are just in the transition between the yellow and the lavender. Only where there's those properties that are abutting the residential area there are the only place where the overlay is on. And so I remember we talked about the industrial use, but we didn't, as far as I know, we didn't talk about those overlays particularly. But this was a while ago. This was at the start of the process. So I don't think it doesn't affect a lot of the properties, but it does affect a few. And it's also, my point is that it actually makes for a more compatible transition to have those than to not have them. Because especially on a two-sided property, you have you can have residential facing one side and the industrial facing the other. So, but without overlays, I don't know how we handle that.
Yeah, I mean, what you're not seeing is the zoning, but the zoning is, as Commissioner Lord states, consistent with the definition on the land use map that goes along with the map that's in front of you. It does suggest that you wouldn't have residential uses in those areas because they conflict with the underlying land use, which is in light industrial. There's actually a bigger issue that goes along with making the change now as well, is we have to go back and analyze that and sit down with our EIR consultant, because changing land use has ramifications to other things in the EIR. So we have to go back and look and see if it has any impacts related to that, because we've already completed the circulation of the EIR. We're done with it at this point. And RINCON, our consultant, is putting together the responses to comment, which would likely place us back in front of the Planning Commission in January for your recommendation hearing to City Council on both the EIR and Plymore Bay, or the General Plan Local Coastal Program. I don't know if there is or isn't impacts. I just know that we got to talk to them about making the change, because we didn't account for that type of the impacts that would be associated with residential development in that area, meaning additional, likely the impacts would be to traffic. Potentially they could be positive, though, but unclear at this point.
Okay, I guess, Scott, we can go over this a little bit more on one-on-one.
Okay.
Unless you need something from the Planning Commission, or if the Planning Commission is completely, against it, then there won't be any other, discussion.
Commissioner Lord, that's what I was saying. Like, I haven't heard anybody else weigh in, so I'm not sure that they don't entirely understand what we're talking about, maybe it's not rising to the level of being concerned. I don't know.
There's no specific plans being considered for Quintana or things like that at this point, right?
No.
Because my only concern is we had that issue with the mixed use, the so-called mixed use on North Main, where there was one property, and I think that's where the second Mike's Barbershop is now, where that one was almost entirely residential, and people were very concerned about that. And I think especially under the types of conditions now that we have, if there's not an economic viability for commercial, I wouldn't have a concern about someone getting some income flow because of residential. But I think you're positing the idea of the residential inside the industrial is problematic in terms of that, even though that's not a use that's dominating the definition of that industrial area, because it would be allowed, it gets to have the benefits of a residential use along with it, which could be things like the noise and nuisance and everything else, which seems kind of counterproductive to the industrial zone in a way.
Well, I mean, that's the issue that you run into when you have industrial zones and you allow residential in them. You know, the folks that will complain will be the folks that are in the residential units, that it's noisy, but yet they're living in an area where the uses are primarily light industrial, where you would expect to find noise and those types of things. And truck trips early in the morning because they're making things, you know, and delivery trucks are coming in and out. And, you know, that's also loud and annoying and wakes you up and those types of things. And in fact, because there are residences over there, we've received complaints from some of the businesses some of the residences that the businesses, you know, have deliveries at all hours of the, you know, day and night. And our response is always, we live in an industrial zone. So you would be expecting to have that, even though your residence is existing.
Well, the problem is, you know, once again, the problem is that it is allowed at this point, and we changed it, or it's been changed. So, you know, there
are... make all those houses legal non-conforming, right? Is that the
no, it makes them legal conforming. That's what even the definition under the general plan says that. Scroll up to it. Here it is right here. It's a general light industrial, and it says existing residential buildings are permitted and are considered conforming. What that means is they could be expanded.
But new buildings
were replaced, right? I mean, if they wanted to propose a new a demo and rebuild, they could do that because it's a conforming unit, right?
I mean, I guess it'll depend on what it says in the zoning code. This allows it to be there and calls it conforming. Likely what that means is that you could expand it. I don't know if you could replace it or not. It would depend on what the language in the zoning code says in relationship to it. I just don't recall what that is off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a whole lot of problem with this, honestly.
I would have more of a question relating to Vistra's letter, which I think, again, is more about zoning code than the general plan, but the idea of how we have put the power plant area on the land use map as visitor serving commercial, and whether that's too limiting for that property and what we might potentially get out of it.
It certainly does. You know, the allowed uses under that land use classification do not allow for energy projects. So they're correct.
I think that's a shame. I think we could be losing out on a huge opportunity there, because I'm not sure. I think it will be a long while before we see anybody else who wants to do anything with that property that would actually be of a benefit to the town, whereas I think utility, energy, public work stuff could be a huge benefit in a lot of ways, especially if it was some kind of green energy things. But I don't know if that's something that could be changed.
It can be changed. It can be changed just in how you define it, meaning the other land use classifications that are commercial allow for those types of things. And it might be something that the city would want to add in, not even just for Vistra's purposes. And we do anticipate them resubmitting a battery project for that location. But that would likely be before these land use changes take effect, so it won't probably impact them. But
Well, one of the issues that, you know, one of the things that, you know, this community has been talking about for a long time is the wind farm project, right, out of the coast and connecting here at the grid. And we don't actually know, I was having this conversation internally, so now I guess it's external. We don't actually know what sort of things they need to make the connection to the grid, and they want to connect there. So that is also a concern about, you know, are we, you know, doing something that would, you know, prohibit them from putting in the infrastructure necessary to connect the wind farm, you know, such as they've been talking about, to the grid in this location. That's about the extent of the conversations, but it was something that I was sort of concerned about. So
I see that as really limiting. I would love to see that changed, just to be a more general use, so we leave ourselves open to some good potentials for it. We don't need a mini mall there, you know, or a major mall. It just, I think that would not only just be the wrong thing for our town, it would kill all the small businesses in town. So yeah, I would really like to see that changed. If any other commissioners would too, that would be great.
Well, I think, yeah, again, this is the first time I'm thinking about it, but I mean, it strikes me that, you know, designating it for the serving is fairly unimaginative and not terribly creative. And this is an enormous piece of property. And the fact that we've already had several people who are interested in the property for industrial uses, you know, is an indication that there's some real potential there. And I don't think it's wise or shrewd to sort of close that off, especially in the economic situation we're in. Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea at all.
To me, it seems like, I mean, I think the foresight was that would be the highest and best use of that property. That doesn't prohibit, I don't think, a Vistra or a energy type of company to come in and do what they need to do. I mean, realistically, you're piping in conductors, you're tapping into the existing substation and you're moving on. You don't need to set up shop right there. I mean, you might have to have some sort of maintenance facility, but it doesn't have to be acres and acres of commercial, of industrial
but if it's
facilities there.
Visitor serving commercial, that's what you're allowed to do there. So I think we need to broaden the definition, you know, what we're going to be calling that, the potential uses for that area. I don't think we want to limit it to visitor serving commercial.
But it's also probably going to come in with a specific plan for that overall site. So
I would hate to see us lower our expectations just because we have a few accessory uses. That's an enormous piece of property. And just like you have, you know, in a larger city, all sorts of subway infrastructure going underneath a hotel or something like that. We can easily accommodate multiple land uses there. But I think if we, you know, that's been something that's been on the board for about 16 years, hoping that we would have some kind of resolution there that was a visitor serving commercial. That's a long standing argument. I'm totally for the green infrastructure that comes in if we need to bring things through there. But I don't think you want to downzone it to industrial, because I think it opens up too many other things that have been fought against pretty dramatically the last few years about some less attractive industrial uses than the ones that have been discussed here tonight. And as long as they have the capacity to float things like exceptions or specific plans, I would say we're best to aim high on this one, leave it that way.
But you know, high could be something like, I don't know, when we were years ago talking about this stuff in different business groups, one of the thoughts was putting a graduate program in there. So you have a whole graduate school that is dealing with alternative energy sources, and you have, you know, your labs built into it, and you could have housing for graduate students there. I mean, I think there are higher and better, and I'm a business person, but I think there's higher and better things than visitor serving commercial. To me, that's, you know, stick a big hotel in it. I think I'd like to see more possibilities, and I think there will be a huge amount of community oversight on whatever goes in there, just because that's our town. You know, it's important to us what happens and how it happens. But
I think my big, you know, I look at this and, you know, my big dream would be, you know, something on par with what Monterey has done with the aquarium. I mean, that would be an ideal visitor serving situation. You know, it's promoting ecotourism. It's green. You know, it's Finding Nemo. It's got all these things wrapped up in it. You know, so we could do a lot of things there, I think.
But you could also do that with a tie-in to the green energy. You know, you've got the links. You've got the links for both a wind farm and a wave farm. You've got, you know, that plant has the ability, you know, it's got like a million square feet in it, literally. You've got gantries that go across the whole nine story section that can lift, you know, several million pounds. So you've got the opportunities there, and then also your inlets coming from the pump house to, you could set up a wave tank or something in the bottom of that and do full size wave machine testing, you know, right in that building. You know, but that's not going to be visitor serving. So Susan has a really good point about that, about not locking it in. But then I also think it's going to need some incredibly, you know, it's going to need some incredible oversight on it to make sure that it's right.
And it's very deep pockets. Yeah.
Did you propose to change the zoning too?
It doesn't, the zoning doesn't need to change. We just need to alter the definition, or the land use doesn't need to change. We're not looking at a zoning map right now. We're looking at the land use map. The definitions would just need to change to include that type of use. And it could be in the land use map, it could be really simple. It could just talk about energy uses would potentially be allowed there. Because we also, if you see the pattern on here, it's dotted, right? That's an overlay that sits over most of it. All of it except for the very front portion of it. And that is a mixed-use residential overlay that allows, you know, both visitor serving and, you know, other residential uses to be there. So you can have a number of different things out there, like you were saying, like you all were saying, because it's a fairly large site. So it could just be added into the definition of what's allowed in that zone, and it would be fine because we have that allowance in most other zones.
So I'd like to see that added into the definition then.
Or land use categories, I guess. This is land use categories, and then it would be commensurate in the zoning. I keep saying, sorry about that. I keep flipping back and forth.
I would really like to see us add it in so we have options. And then it's all going to be best.
I need two more of you to say yes.
Yes. Yes.
So I got Joe saying yes.
Yes.
Jesse.
And Jesse saying yes? Okay.
So is that a secondary use? Are those additional uses?
You could see that it would be, you know, that would be accomplished on the zoning side of things through a conditional use permit process.
And we're just getting, and like Susan's saying, we're just giving it added flexibility, right? I think that's what you're just.
And it would be an allowed thing that could go out there under a conditional use permit, but the city would have the say over whether, hey, you know, the primary use out here needs to be visitor serving commercial because that's the zone or not. I mean, it's up to the city, really, you know, what we want to see happen then. If you do that.
So as a question, if somebody wanted to establish a traditional engineering firm or digital engineering or some kind of an incubator facility for various high-tech businesses, with the change that we're suggesting, that might be allowed in some portion of the properties. That it correct?
Probably not. It would probably require a zone change, or if you had a, you know, a project that came in that had multiple uses with it, you'd go through a master plan for it. And that would tell you what the land uses that are out there. And they may change, that may, you know, change the zoning of the property, change the land use of the property based on the project that comes in. Other than that, it would be, again, through conditional use permit process. But that type of use wouldn't necessarily be consistent with it unless it was energy related.
Well, I just want to state for the record, the North Embarcadero Waterfront Futures Group looked at that project back in 2004, 2005. And that's a city document that was done for the council. And the thinking there was that after some very controversial attempts by then Dynergy to rebuild the plant and then build a replacement plant next to it, the decision was to move away from any kind of energy like that and bury that possibility. The once through cooling that was determined to be environmentally unsound by several courts, federal court systems, pretty much put the end to that kind of thinking for a conventional energy source. But I think if you revisit that report, you know, as Jerry was saying, the property is massive. The volume of the building is massive. There were studies done by students at Cal Poly as to how much volume and what kinds of uses could be put in there. And it would be a shame to lose one of the most significant structures we have for something that's a very pedestrian energy use. I don't have any trouble at all having components of green energy linked to the development of the property, but I think to lower it to something beyond a kind of radical mixed use would be very detrimental to the long-term plans of the city. I think that's a strategic point that people have curiously missed. It's the center of the city. It's the center of the map. It's the north of the Embarcadero. It's a very, very fascinating site that we're used to thinking of as this negative thing. And it should be something fantastic, not just a battery yard.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Susan's point, if I'm gathering it correctly, was just added flexibility. And I'm for that. And I agree with you 100%, Michael. I think that you nailed it there. So.
I'm just wondering, you know, I have always thought of that as the most critical piece of property in the entire city. And, you know, it's kind of fearful to think that we're contemplating changing something at the sort of the tail end of one planning, recommending a change at the tail end of one planning commission meeting. I mean, it seems to require much more thought than that for considering change.
I think every conversation that I've been involved with this site, it's always ended up with, well, we're going to need a specific plan for this site for any development there at all. And I think that's really what should be required on that. But because there's some incredible linkages and a nexus on that site with things such as inlets, well, you know, 6 foot high water inlets from the bay, where you also have, you know, 30 inch and four, you know, and 48 inch pipelines that go out to the mooring fields, you know, across these intertidal zones and stuff that you'd never be able to put in again, but are all available. You've got a 36 inch pipeline that goes up to the top of the ridge up where they used to have the tank farm on the top of the ridge on 41. You know, so there's potential to do, you know, pumped hydro, you know, up to tank farms up on top of the hill, you know, for storage, for energy storage. There's, you know, a lot of things that could go there. And if it turns into a boutique hotel, I think it's just a criminal waste, you know, of resources and of imagination.
I agree.
So
keep it flexible.
The master plan is in a policy that's LU 5.4.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't think we're going to, you know.
I'm still not entirely sure what I'm doing with the with that item. I seem to hear a couple of you walk it back that said it was a good thing to add back in, so now I'm a little unclear.
I would like to see the definition expanded beyond visitor serving commercial so that the opportunity is there for more mixed use possibilities.
That's not what I was agreeing to.
So I can't. So again, I'm gonna go back. This is the 11th hour. I'm not super inclined to go down that. Given where we're at with the EIR, those are huge. This is a 100-acre site. Those are huge changes. If we're going to add in a whole bunch of other types of mixed use things that we have not analyzed in our EIR, and that would create problems, is my guess. I mean, I'd go find out and talk to Rincon, but I would be concerned about making that change right now because our EIR has been routed and we're done. I have less of a concern adding in things like, you know, accommodate green energy out here because I think it's nebulous enough to not run afoul of the current EIR. So
that works for me. I just feel like this green energy opportunity is something we just don't want to miss. So
if I could speak frankly here, I don't think the city council will let that pass us by. If, you know, even if it took an act of Congress, they would find a way to make it work, no matter what we said at this point in this meeting. that's just my opinion.
But if our documents say it's got to be visitor serving commercial, period.
Change it.
Then how do we get in that other use?
You could always change land use. And when you change land use is when it comes in with the project. That happens pretty regularly. You don't usually get standalone, you know, requests for land use changes. It usually is a whole package. We have the master plan requirement in here, as Amy referred to. And master plans oftentimes come in with land use changes. It's not uncommon because we don't know, you know, we don't know the possibility. What is the possibility of uses that go there? We don't know that because it hasn't come forward yet. But developers can come up with unique ideas and a unique mix that we've never envisioned. And the master plan process would cover that. So,
and I think that's the idea behind the policy to do a master plan for this site, is that it is 100 acres and there is such a range of opportunities. And during the discussion at both GPAC and the previous Planning Commission meetings, it was discussed that, you know, we do want flexibility on this site. This master plan process will afford us the opportunity to maintain that flexibility, see what happens when that comes in for development, knowing that we would want to see a range of uses here, but with the visitor serving along the Embarcadero Street side area.
Okay, I could buy that. All right, as long as it's flexible, I'm happy. I withdraw anything I ever said.
Okay, I think you're on the right track, Susan, and your heart's in the right place.
I think we're all looking for the same thing on that, is, you know, just to have the ability to do something innovative there, you know, rather than a 7-Eleven or something. As we've got this wrapped up, Scott, you need a motion? Do we need a recommendation?
You don't actually have to do anything right now. We have all of your comments. We're going to go, you know, sort of prepare the document for review for the City Council. But we're going to bring it back in front of you with the EIR. You have to make recommendations on both documents. And so I didn't put a resolution in it for you in here tonight to just do it for this because you don't have the EIR in front of you. But I will bring it back with a resolution. You'll have already reviewed all this, and then you'll be getting a presentation from our environmental consultant, Rincon, and you'll be making a recommendation for adoption of general plan, local coastal program, and the EIR. And so that'll be what comes before you next, and that, you know, could be as early as January or maybe even beginning of February, something like that. So
Okay, so we'll move on to the next item.
Can I ask a clarifying note, a question here? So, Scott, there's a strong possibility that three of us could not be here on the next meeting, or I'm sorry, when that comes back before you. So what happens then? So if it's just, hypothetically, if it's just Joe and Susan at that point and you have three new commissioners, what happens then?
I mean, my life becomes a lot more complicated. Yeah, I mean, we're going to have at least two, as you point out, Commissioner Barone, and yeah, we'll have to sit down with them and go over it. Hopefully, if they're applying for the position, they've been looking at these things because we've been working on them for 4 years, a little over, actually. So I would imagine that they're going to get asked questions during the interview process about this and what they know about it, given, you know, it's one of the biggest things we've been looking at for the last several years. So hopefully they have dug in and taken a look at it. And then it'll be hopefully up to the remaining commissioners, the three, to, you know, guide it through that last and final meeting. If we come back in January, it'll be fine. If we come back in February, then it'll be the new ones. If we come back in January, there'll be four of you. So,
Scott, could I ask you to cut off your screen share?
Oh, sure.
Just thank you. Just so I can see everybody. Okay, any other questions or comments on that item B1? Are we ready to?
I'll just thank everybody. It's been awesome working with all of you on this. For those who I don't see at the next meeting, and I'll sign off for tonight.
Okay, thank you, Amy.
Thank you. Bye.
Night.
Okay, new businesses, we have none. Unfinished business, we don't have anything listed. Planning Commissioner comments, future agenda items. Does anybody have anything? Joe?
Well, I would just like to echo Commissioner Lucas's comments that it's been a genuine privilege, Jerry, to serve with you, and you will be, you know, profoundly missed, really.
Well, thank you, guys. I just want to say that it's been a great pleasure, and it's, you know, for this commission has been one of the favorites I've dealt with, you know, and been involved with, and I think we've got, you know, great intellectual and humanitarian diversity of views here, and I really appreciate the comments from, you know, and the interaction I've had with you guys. And I'm not dying, so, but, so you'll probably see me again. But once again, just thanks. Thanks for everything, and thanks for all the input and all the, and it's been fun. So,
yeah, Scott, I'd like to publicly thank you too, Jerry. You got to give me a moment here to say thank you for all you've done for us, and I appreciate, you know, everything you've done for our community, and you deserve a big pat on the back, and if I were next to you, I'd give you one. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Scott, you got anything new to add?
I do have two things. We're doing on Wednesday, right? An appreciation thing for not only city staff, but also for our advisory board members. Dana, city clerk, sent that out to you, I think maybe at least once or twice. And I think maybe I forwarded it once. I can send it out again this evening if you haven't gotten it or received it. It'll be at the community center on Wednesday between 1 and 3 p.m. And we have something to hand out to you. Unfortunately, I can't be there, but Cindy will be there in my stead. So you'll see her if you have to go by there then. It'd be great if you could make it there. If not, we'll get you the items that they're passing out, outside of that time frame. But we can certainly make that happen. The other item that I had, I wanted to just echo what the other commissioner said. I really appreciated, really appreciated working with you, Jerry, over the years. It's been illuminating often, and you definitely like to roll up your sleeves and weigh in and dig into the topics, and I've always appreciated that about you. You're going to be missed, but you definitely served your time, so I can understand wanting to move on and do other things with your Tuesday evenings. So I wish you all the best as you move on in your endeavors.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks, everybody.
And at this point, we'll adjourn to the next regular, you'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting on January 5th, 2021 at 6 p.m. And it'll be through teleconference. And thanks again for everything, everybody.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Happy holidays.